I'm Tara Merchaner. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, hitting the road, President Trump heads to Pittsburgh to speak to an event on energy, what he had to say on the economy, and much more. Making the cut, Senate Republicans are at work to formally pass the DOGE cuts championed by President Trump. Success story, Notre Dame Cathedral sets new records, the impressive numbers it has to boast. And future peacemakers, how an initiative inspired by popes hopes to foster peace among young people from warring countries. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
And thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Bonaventure, our top story tonight. President Donald Trump takes his message on the road, announcing billions of dollars of energy and technology investments in Pennsylvania. The president also responded to questions about recent controversies. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tara, in Pittsburgh, President Trump met with dozens of top execs from top firms. The president has repeatedly pledged U.S. energy dominance.
President Donald Trump addresses the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit being held at Carnegie Mellon University.
We're back in Pittsburgh to announce the largest package of investments in the history of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and it's not even close. I don't imagine it's too close.
Pennsylvania is at the forefront of his energy agenda. Coal and natural gas are key parts of that and are big industries in the state.
This afternoon, 20 leading technology and energy companies are announcing more than $92 billion of investments in Pennsylvania. And if you want, we could probably get them up. Let's talk to them right now. We're here today because we believe that America's destiny is to dominate every industry and be the first in every technology. And that includes being the world's number one superpower in artificial intelligence. And we are way ahead of China, I have to say.
President Trump responded earlier today to other headlines. He was asked about his decision to wait 50 days before hitting Russia with more tariffs over the war in Ukraine.
But you should be asking that question to Biden. Why did he get us into this war? Because he's incompetent. It would have never happened if I were president.
President Trump also expressed his support for Attorney General Pam Bondi and her handling of the Jeffrey Epstein case.
Credibility is very important, and you want credible evidence for something like that. And I think the Attorney General has handled it very well. And it's going to be up to her. Whatever she thinks is credible, she should release.
And back at the Pennsylvania Energy and Innovation Summit, President Trump also called today, quote, a triumphant day for the people of the Commonwealth and for the United States of America. Tara, back to you.
All right, Owen, thank you. Well, President Trump's pick to be the next ambassador to the United Nations appeared before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. During his confirmation hearing, Mike Waltz told lawmakers that he plans to make the world body, quote, great again. But some of the questions focused on his previous position in the Trump administration as national security advisor. Waltz was ousted after mistakenly adding a journalist to a private signal chat used to discuss sensitive security plans.
This, you were sharing details about an upcoming airstrike and the time of launch and the potential targets. I mean, this was demonstrably sensitive information. And the question I asked was, were you investigated for this expansion of the signal group to include a journalist?
The White House conducted an investigation, and my understanding is the Department of Defense is still conducting an investigation.
Was any disciplinary action taken?
From the White House Investigation Center?
Yes.
No, the use of signal was not only authorized, it's still authorized and highly recommended.
All right. Meanwhile, hundreds of Department of Education employees have started receiving their updated termination notices today. EWTN White House correspondent Owen Jensen had a chance to ask the president about those layoffs.
We had a big win with the Supreme Court on the Department of Education. We want to bring education back to the states, take the federal government out of it. A little tiny bit of supervision, but very little, almost nothing, like to make sure they speak English. That's about all we need.
The president was referring to yesterday's Supreme Court decision in a 6-3 ruling. The justices allowed the president to proceed with his plan of dismantling the Department of Education. This lifted a lower court ruling which prevented administration officials from slashing more than a third of the department's employees. And the downsizing doesn't stop there. Senate Republicans are spending the week trying to deliver President Donald Trump's package that formalizes some of the cuts made by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. Republicans do not have the votes to get the $9.4 billion in cuts across the finish line by Friday, as required by law. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales reports. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tara. Yes, you've heard me say it before. It's a numbers game up here on Capitol Hill, and right now, not enough Republicans are on board to pass what is known as the rescissions package. You may recall it narrowly passed the House back in May, and it would cut funding for public broadcasting and USAID programs. Republican Senator Susan Collins is one of those who wants changes like keeping the PEPFAR program intact, which helps women and pregnant women abroad.
I can't imagine why we would want to terminate that program or the maternal and child health program, which is aimed at providing malnourished pregnant women with important vitamins that they need.
Democrats agree.
Taking the extreme position of blocking this life-saving program is as short-sighted and nihilistic as siding with Vladimir Putin and failing to help Ukraine.
Republicans argue waste and needless spending needs to be stopped.
We need to pare it back and make sure that it's going to save lives. It goes to food, medicine, and shelter for people who are living in camps.
The Centers for Disease Control has reported that money for PEPFAR was used to fund abortions in Southeast Africa in violation of U.S. law. Besides primarily targeting foreign aid within the State Department, the DOGE package of cuts would rescind $1.1 billion in federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which provides funds to NPR and PBS.
NPR, which was supposed to be nonpartisan, and I read that 84% of their stories attack Republicans, 54% are pro-Democrats. Their CEO has made very partisan comments in the past, attacking Trump.
It is so undeniable that NPR is incredibly, incredibly left and very Democratic. I mean, they can't pretend that it's actually not a strong, strong left bias, of course. Now, that's not to say they need to cut them or to destroy it.
And congressional lawmakers are certainly feeling the pressure from President Trump. He has threatened to not endorse any Republican who opposes the rescissions package. And another thing to consider, if the Senate does pass it, Democrats are already threatening to shut down the government by withholding their support for government funding past September 30th. So there are a lot of hands in the congressional kitchen, and we'll see what meal is served on the table. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Eric, thank you. Thousands of employees have been laid off this week by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Workers received an email on Monday announcing their positions were being eliminated by close of business. The move comes after the Supreme Court ruled HHS was allowed to proceed with a reduction in force. Now to Nigeria, where the faithful are waiting for updates on the status of three seminarians abducted during an attack last week. The kidnapping took place in the Diocese of Auchi in southern Nigeria. One security guard was killed. Now the head of the diocese has a message for the family and friends of those missing. In an interview with EWTN's ACI Africa, Bishop Gabriel Dunia says in part, quote, "Do not be crushed by fear, threats, or intimidation. These findings are not happening only at the seminary. Some seminarians have been kidnapped from their homes while on holiday. We must remain vigilant and do all we can to protect them." And joining us now is Father Don Bosco Anyala, editor-in-chief of ACI Africa, a service of EWTN. Father Don Bosco, welcome back. It's good to have you on. First, do you know anything more about the three seminarians who were abducted?
First of all, thanks for having me. You've just quoted there the Bishop of Auchi Diocese. And we interviewed him on Sunday, and he told us that to the best of his knowledge, the diocese has not yet been in contact for ransom. The diocese has not been contacted for ransom. So he is in touch with the priests on the ground, And as at Sunday, he had not been contacted, but he's expecting that the kidnappers would be asking for ransom.
Do you have any information about who might be responsible for this?
In the interview, the bishop disclosed that it could be an inside job, meaning he has done a lot in securing the premises. He has up to 50 security guards, but on that fateful day, not all the security were present. So he thinks that the kidnappers might have colluded with some of the security forces to accomplish the kidnapping. Mm. But clearly who did it, it's not known.
Wow. We know Nigeria has become certainly a hotspot for these crimes targeting the faithful. Tell us some other recent examples, and what is daily like life there for the faithful now?
We have repeatedly reported about kidnappings. In the diocese in the north of the country, it's not just about the priests, but also villages are attacked, affecting worship. The Bishop of Makurdi has told us that parishes have been closed down because of the attacks. And so pastoral life of the people has been affected. So priests, catechists are not able to go on with their pastoral work because of the fear of insecurity. It is a challenge in parts of Nigeria.
So scary and sad. And very quickly, we've got about 30 seconds yet left. What would you like to see from the international community now? And do you think enough is being done?
The people we've talked to from Nigeria, especially the Catholic Church, has emphasized the need of not removing Nigeria from countries that are persecuted because of Christian faith. So the international community could continue putting pressure on Nigeria to make freedom of religion a right that every Nigerian should respect. And so there's need to include Nigeria in countries that have Christian persecution.
We'll keep praying. Father, thank you for joining us. Stay safe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. God bless.
God bless.
Thank you.
Well, we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a Citadel of Peace. We'll show you the initiative that's training young people to be ambassadors of peace and which popes inspired it. And jaw-dropping numbers. See if you can guess how many visitors have seen the Cathedral of Notre Dame since it reopened. That and more still ahead. The National Weather Service has issued a flood watch to seven counties in New Jersey for Wednesday. The new threat comes after a chaotic night of flooding so severe it left at least two people dead. Storms moved through the Northeast on Monday night, covering some areas in floodwaters. Video here shows water flowing down into a Manhattan subway station, submerging the platform. Most flash flood warnings have expired, even as some roads do remain closed in sections of New Jersey. In Texas, the number of confirmed deaths from the July 4th floodings has now reached 133. More than 100 people are still missing. The threat isn't over yet either. Flash flood watches were in effect earlier today as crews continue recovery efforts. And in some places, rebuilding has already begun. Joining us now is Dr. Adin Rajib, Assistant Professor of Civil Engineering at the University of Texas Arlington. Dr. Rajib, thank you for coming on. First, can you give us an estimate on the cost of the damage done in Texas?
Thanks for having me, Tara. It's still a bit early to have an estimated cost because the rescue operations are still ongoing. We had a moderate storm just day before yesterday, and as you said, the flood warnings are still on. So we have to wait for another couple of days.
So crazy what happened there, and we're still praying for all the people, of course, as well. Tell me about the rebuilding. When does that begin, and how long could that take?
The rebuilding operation has already started in some parts, and in my understanding, it's going to take some time. We developed a model, and we found, based on the model results, that there were at least 1,800 mapped building footprints within the flooded areas. So that is a big number, and from that number, you can tell that it's not going to be an overnight job to rebuild all those damaged homes and infrastructures.
No, so much work that's going to have to go into this. What are the priorities? What will be the first things that get rebuilt?
I would say the water supply infrastructure. We cannot afford to have a public health crisis. Usually, public health crisis follows these sort of mega floods. We have to ensure the people there have enough supply of water. And once we rebuild the water supply infrastructure and protect the public health, we can focus on rebuilding the other critical infrastructures.
So important. The Guadalupe River was an attraction also for many campers, and there were also restaurants along that river. It's amazing. Is there a safe way to rebuild along that river? Would people do it again?
That's a great question. Look, humans are always attracted to rivers and waters and water recreation, particularly in the context of Texas. This is part of our culture. So we cannot stop people from doing that, and we should not. What we can do is we can start smart rebuilding. We can look into the data where the flood hazard zones are, and based on that, we can think of strategized rebuilding.
And certainly a long road ahead. We know a lot of good people are jumping in to make this all happen and bring, you know, this area back to hopefully eventually what it was again. Dr. Adnan Rajib, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
All right, a federal judge says the Trump administration cannot bar previously approved resettlement refugees from entering the U.S., even if they are from countries now covered by a travel ban. The ruling says the government must move forward processing these cases, even in the face of restrictions under a current executive order. It also calls on the government to identify every eligible refugee case and start to process them immediately. A unique group recently met at the Vatican, hoping to establish it as a place to build peace between nations in conflict. The Clementi Foundation is inspired by the venerable Robert Schuman. He's often hailed as the founding father of a united Europe. The chairman of the foundation explained to EWTN how they aim to promote peace and dialogue among nations by fostering spaces for reconciliation and cooperation rooted in Christian values.
The Vatican offers here what the church has always offered, a refuge for people who can and want to talk about peace, about practical solutions. And so we're extremely grateful for the Vatican for offering this place. The Academy of Science for the last 500 years offers place for people from all religions, all culture, and our initiative brings people from five continents. And having all these people working together, the Vatican offers all the conditions necessary for people to be able to talk freely out of their mind, out of experience, out of their hearts, I would say.
Meanwhile, elsewhere in Italy, an international initiative inspired Papal Calls for Reconciliation is seeking to train young leaders to be ambassadors of peace. The initiative helps people from global conflict zones learn how to contribute to conflict resolution. EWTN Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
This is Rondine, known as the Citadel of Peace.
Not long ago, this Tuscan village was completely abandoned. And now, years later, built brick by brick, it houses students from around the globe from warring countries. And here, they learn how to live together, and they learn the tools to make peace.
Rondine is home to an association founded by psychologist Franco Vaccari, whose father's experience as an army general and prisoner of war helped inspire his commitment to peace. Since 1988, the project has reached people from dozens of conflict and post-conflict zones, including Ukraine and Russia, Israel and Palestine. And today, the town is an oasis for whoever is looking for a way to build peace.
We are very attached to St. Francis of Assisi of Laverna, because it was there that he received the stigmata. But we have always seen them as the wounds of humanity, transfigured by love. And this is incredibly meaningful, because we go to Laverna with Muslims, with Jews, with non-believers, and all of them find in this man a source of life and peace.
Inspired by Pope Francis, who just weeks before his passing, wrote from his hospital bed that we must disarm words to disarm the earth. The Rondine Association also looks to Pope Leo's message of peace for inspiration.
Pope Leo told us, enemies must look each other in the eye. And here at Rondine, we know very well that he spoke a powerful truth. Either enemies look each other in the eye, or peace will never come.
We speak with some of the students from around the world who now live in this oasis, not to escape the war, but to talk about their lived experiences and learn from one another how to heal and prevent war and hate.
I grew up on the way of thinking that we had this narrative about the war, because as you probably know, our war stopped because NATO intervened. So for us, they are like big friends, allies, we love them. But when I came here, I hung out with people from Lebanon and from Middle East and from other countries, that they had different kind of perspective about all these things.
And Valeria from Ukraine shares how coming to Rondine was not easy at first.
Rondine, it's not about sitting on the table and negotiate. Rondine, it's about daily life. So I'm waking up and the first person I'm seeing for 2 years during the experience, my enemy that like sleeping on the bed in front of me. And then we are like waking up together, having coffee, having breakfast, taking care. This that makes you feel like, wow, I'm important.
In this little oasis, the students have a chance to experience life outside of the war and conflict that has plagued their lives. Now they also have a chance to return home and instill hope in their own communities that on the other side of conflict are just other people trying to survive and thrive. In Rondine, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
All right, up next on EWTN News Nightly, a major milestone for Notre Dame Cathedral in France, one of the most well-known churches in the world. Plus, learn more about the former head of the Franciscan Order and Doctor of the Church, whose feast we celebrate today. Notre Dame Cathedral has become the most visited place in France. Ever since the iconic church reopened last December, it has welcomed more than 6 million visitors. This after the massive reconstruction project following the devastating 2019 fire forcing its closure. Reports say on average, 35,000 people visit the cathedral daily, with numbers increasing from month to month. And finally tonight, as we mentioned earlier in the newscast, today is the feast of the seraphic doctor, Saint Bonaventure, born in the 13th century in Italy. He became a famous theologian and doctor of the church. Saint Bonaventure joined the Franciscans in the year 1243. He went on to become the order's superior. He worked to preserve a spirit of unity and taught, "Let meditation of Christ's life be your one and only aim, your rest, your food, your desire, your study." Saint Bonaventure stands as one of the greatest theologians in church history, and his many writings are still studied and enjoyed. Canonized in 1482 and later named a doctor of the church, he died on this day in 1274. Saint Bonaventure, pray for us. And we thank you so much for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tara Merchant. Good night, and God bless.